Welcome to Savor. I'm Danielle Beck Ellsworth, a licensed marriage and family therapist. And today we're going to learn about acupuncture and how acupuncture can really help somebody who's going through eating disorder recovery. Today we're really fortunate to have Nora McIntyre speak with us about acupuncture. She's a licensed acupuncturist who practices in Los Angeles, California, where she helps people heal from eating disorders, anxiety, trauma, headaches, and other physical pain. She's treated eating disorders in both private practice and as part of an intensive outpatient program team. She's also a certified in posture therapy, which helps people correct body alignment through therapeutic exercises. So thank you very much, Nora, for being here and sharing your knowledge with us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So I think we should start at the beginning and talk about what is acupuncture, because I know there's media about acupuncture and there's rumors about it and there's people who've experienced it directly and had life-changing experiences, and then there's the people who think, well, it's just about needles and I hate needles. I know when I recommend it for my clients, that's actually a reaction a good chunk of the time, like, oh, no, I don't like needles. And so how would you describe acupuncture to somebody who doesn't know much about it?
Well, to start at the beginning, acupuncture, I think, is kind of the best known tool of Chinese medicine. But I always like to make the point that I don't just practice acupuncture. Acupuncture is just one tool of Chinese medicine, but Chinese medicine is actually, it's an entirely different way of thinking about the body and our own relationship with the body. So acupuncture, yes, very, very helpful. And we'll talk about kind of the nitty-gritty concerns people have regarding needles in just a moment. But I always like to stress that really, especially what we're called licensed acupuncturists in the state of California. Mm-hmm. And I always say that I think that's kind of an unfortunate name, because it implies that all we do is acupuncture. Mm-hmm. And we actually use a number of other tools, everything from herbal medicine, certain types of meditation, certain types of massage, things like Qigong and Tai Chi, which are moving meditation. Mm-hmm. So there are a number of different tools. So if somebody needs something more or something instead of acupuncture, there's still some other tools out there for them. Regarding the acupuncture, so I always tell people that the needles are all single-used, sterile, disposable, and they're also very, very small. And they come in a small plastic tube called a guide tube, and we put that into the skin. And usually people don't feel too much of anything when the needle goes in. If they do, it's like a very, very small pinch. And then their job, once they're on the table, is really just to relax. A lot of people actually fall asleep during acupuncture, which surprises some people because needles sound scary, but they're very, very small, and a lot of people actually have a very relaxing experience. And I would say the vast majority of people find it pretty pleasant. And acupuncture is really good for, in a nutshell, it helps the body regulate itself. So unlike pharmaceuticals or adding some other substance to the body, what acupuncture is doing is just assisting your body in regulating your body's functions. So it's a very gentle, safe way, because we aren't adding anything foreign that your body has to digest. We're just giving it some suggestions and some information to do what it's really designed to do, which is stay healthy and regulated.
Yeah, so it's not very invasive and doesn't have a lot of side effects.
Exactly. And that's why it tends to be so safe, with a minimum of side effects, because the body really does know how to balance itself. We're just giving a little bit of assistance.
Great. So I've done acupuncture on and off over the years. And
that's good to hear.
Yes. And I know when my acupuncturist is finding a point, she'll often kind of push on various points in my body and then ask me, you know, is it tender? Does it hurt? And it kind of feels like a little bruise in that area. So could you maybe explain like that process of kind of finding the points and that sensation that some people might get when there's a little bit of pressure applied there?
So part of what we as acupuncturists do are getting information from the body, and it's a little bit different than when you go to the Western world and the physician. We're getting information from other ways, one of which that you mentioned is called palpation, and that's just feeling the points and seeing what kind of feedback we get. And sometimes that's what I feel when I push the point. Sometimes there's a little more resistance, or the point is a little softer. And then what you're describing is the feedback that you're able to give your acupuncturist, where maybe it's a little bit tender there, which can be an indication that energy is stuck around that area and it could use some attention. So it's kind of a conversation with the body. And that's part of what the feeling of the points is.
Yeah, I guess I'm a little bit sensitive because like she'll push and I'm like, oh dear.
Some points are like that. There are some points that are like that. And that's really a message from the body that there's something going on and that needs some attention.
So I know she's was actually telling me recently that I can feel the chi really well. Could you describe or explain what chi is?
Sure. Chi. So for a really simple kind of layman explanation of what chi is, it's really just the stuff that makes your body work, meaning the active processes of your body. So respiration, digestion, being able to mentally process things. That is chi. Kind of chi is the life force. So somebody who's deceased, no chi. Us, this conversation, chi. Right. And then what we're doing with the needles is just interacting with that energy to, again, help things regulate.
So animals then must have chi too, right?
Absolutely. And my dog definitely gets some acupuncture. She had her first experience this year.
Wow. How can you tell if they're responding to it?
Well, actually, the animals and the acupuncture is really a demonstration of how it's not really the placebo effect, which is sometimes a criticism that's thrown at acupuncture, is that, you know, maybe it's just something exotic and you're responding to the idea or somebody, the interaction with the practitioner. But for instance, with my dog, I took her in to the vet who did acupuncture because she limped. She had injured her knee, and you could tell because, as animals do, she limped, she was tender getting up, and we went to the acupuncturist and she got some treatment. And then she didn't limp anymore. It's like a direct demonstration that she felt better, that there was no placebo or mental aspect to it. The acupuncture helped her body repair itself.
That seems quite connected. Great. And when you're assessing a patient, I know there's a couple, so you mentioned palpitation.
Palpation.
And then there's a couple other ways of assessing. I know she was like, it feels like she's taking my pulse, but I know she's doing more than that. And then she looks at my tongue. And
And these are diagnostic methods that we use in Chinese medicine that aren't so prevalent in the Western world. I'll say it that way. We're looking at the tongue and we are taking the pulse. And with the pulse, we are doing something different than, say, your Western physician would be, where you're counting beats per minute or something like that. When we take the pulse, we use three different fingers on both sides, and each one of those pulse positions corresponds to a different organ and meridian system. And what we're looking for is differences in how the pulse feels underneath our finger. Are these different positions? Is one stronger than another? Are they different in terms of width? Which one is strongest? Can you feel it at the most superficial level? Can you feel it at the deepest level? All of these things which give us information, which is really kind of like a map of your body's energy and what's happening in all your major systems. And then we combine that with looking at your tongue. And when we look at your tongue, we're looking at everything from the size, the shape, the color, if there are cracks in the tongue, where they are and what direction they run, if there's a coating on your tongue, where that is and what color it is. And all of that, again, tells us what's happening in the major systems of the body. The tongue is really a map of the body and can tell you a surprising amount about what's happening.
Yeah,
and both of those are really good feedback for how the treatment process is going as well.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't think I've ever had a Western doctor look at my tongue.
So. Yes, that's the part where Chinese medicine is more than that, just acupuncture. Mm. You can see that we're thinking about the body and the way that it kind of communicates with us in a different way than Western physicians.
Yeah, it's a lot more holistic. You know, it's looking at the whole body, your whole system, instead of just zooming in on one part that a Western doctor might specialize in.
Absolutely. And sometimes when people come in and do an intake their first time with acupuncture and they have a conversation with the acupuncturist, they're surprised at some of the questions that we may ask because they don't seem directly related to their chief complaint, what got them in the door. But again, as you said, we're really looking at the holistic interconnections of the body, and you can't separate one symptom from the rest of the body. It's not like you can separate that out. Mm-hmm. And we want everything to be able to work well together. Mm-hmm. So we have to pay attention to the entire body.
Mm-hmm. Great. Are you familiar with any of the research on acupuncture that has come, or the experimental design where they have a control group and then they have the experimental group? And because you were mentioning placebo effect earlier. And,
yes.
Yeah, I've heard that too. And but acupuncture, I mean, I think people even will say it about therapy too, clinical therapy. And so, you know, studies where they have the random sampling and the control group usually are really, you know, reliable to show if something is effective.
Yeah, and I think that might actually be pretty important to talk about here because, you know, as consumers, if you're looking into acupuncture and you're looking into research, which is more and more available on the internet, there are some things that you should know about how those studies are conducted. The primary point that I do like to make, which is starting to be more recognized in the research community, is the idea of what's called sham acupuncture, which tends to drive acupuncturists crazy because what sham acupuncture is, there's kind of two versions of it. One is true acupuncture is where the acupuncture points that are recognized, say, in textbooks, receive needles, and that's, quote, true acupuncture because you're using the meridians and the points that are recognized. And then one version of sham acupuncture is where they do very superficial needling in areas that aren't recognized as acupuncture points. So that's one version, and that tends for a while, and sometimes still, has been used as a control to see if true acupuncture is actually doing anything. The other version it's basically called a PARC device, and it's a little device that goes on the skin where it replicates some of the sensation of needling, but the needle doesn't actually enter the skin. And the reason acupuncturists, myself included, think that these aren't the best controls is that according to the model of Chinese medicine and acupuncture, whenever you put a needle into the body, even if it's not on a quote unquote official acupuncture point, you're still interacting with the meridians. So it's not an inert intervention. It is still having a physiological effect on the body. And this is starting to be a little bit more recognized in the research community, which is why they've shifted over a little bit to the device that doesn't actually pierce the skin. However, according still to the model of Chinese medicine, that's still a form of acupressure. You're still interacting with the skin and the meridians that run along it. And even from a Western point of view, even if you don't pierce the skin, you're still interacting with your nervous system, right? You can feel light pressure on your skin. That's because your nervous system is picking that up. So again, the concern is that those sham methods aren't really great to demonstrate placebo because they're not inert. They are having an effect on the body. And that a better research design would be to see how acupuncture compares, say, to conventional treatment to see which is more effective. That might be more relevant information for consumers.
Oh, okay. So they're trying to, it sounds like, you know, because it's almost like they want the study to be blind, right? So that the the subject doesn't realize, or the participant doesn't realize if they're getting actual acupuncture or
not. Exactly.
But then through, interacting with the body, they're still creating some kind of reaction.
Exactly, which is why sometimes the sham acupuncture seems to have a therapeutic effect. Mm-hmm. An acupuncturist would say, well, of course it does, because you're still performing acupuncture even if you're not on, quote, an official acupuncture point.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, that's really good to know. I think because I have heard that in passing before, that, oh, it doesn't matter where the points are, because if you put a needle anywhere, you know, people get better. I didn't really understand that. I was like, really?
And here's the difference, though, that's also important to know, that now there are some newer technologies out there, things like functional MRIs and hemodynamic studies, mm-hmm. that they're applying to acupuncture research. Oh. And there is, in fact, a difference between a true acupuncture point and a like the superficial needling in a non-acupuncture point, mm-hmm. that there are longer lasting effects and there are physiological differences that do happen, mm-hmm. when you use the official acupuncture point as opposed to something just in the area.
Wow. That's so there's fascinating.
There may be therapeutic benefit to both, but there's greater for the acupuncture point.
Yeah. Oh, that's so great that technology's catching up.
Yes, absolutely.
You can show it. Wonderful. When I don't think we touched on this, when you are placing a needle, what is actually happening there? Like what's the needle doing?
So I always tell my patients that there are two versions. Mm-hmm. The first is the Western version, which I'll start with because most people are a little bit more perhaps comfortable and familiar with that type of language. Mm-hmm. So what they seem to show with the studies is that acupuncture helps the body regulate the major systems, the first of which is the nervous system. And so the moment that the needle goes in and you've interacted with the skin, you've also interacted with the nervous system. And so what acupuncture seems to do is help the overall nervous system, without getting too technical about the autonomic, et cetera, is to help the body's nervous system regulate itself. So for instance, if somebody, which I think is probably more common in this culture, to be kind of caught in the fight or flight, revved up aspect of your nervous system, acupuncture helps you kind of down-regulate into a more relaxed mode. Mm-hmm. And then this, of course, because it's related to everything from hormones to circulation to the chemicals that circulate in your body, mm-hmm. once the nervous system is more balanced, then that has implications for the rest of your body, mm-hmm. how your body regulates its hormones, its neurotransmitters. It's thought to be some of the chemicals that follow that, the endorphins, is how acupuncture tends to help with pain relief, for instance. So really, again, it goes back to the body regulating the major physiological functions. Mm-hmm. And then the Eastern version, if people like that, mm-hmm. Is that there is a certain flow of energy in the body. And what the acupuncture needles are doing is helping regulate that so that the body functions as well as possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Well, yeah, both make sense.
Okay.
That's good. So you've used acupuncture with people who are in recovery from an eating disorder.
Yes.
And so I would guess that most people don't think about acupuncture when it comes to eating disorder recovery. I don't think any of my clients have come in already seeing an acupuncturist. I'm usually the first one suggesting it, or they go to a program where it's part of the process and mm-hmm. It's one of the activities or groups that they do.
Yes.
So how does acupuncture or Chinese medicine help with eating disorder recovery?
So I think it goes back to the idea that we're looking at the body as a whole. Really, eating disorders, as anybody who either treats it or is experienced in eating disorder, definitely has to do with both the physical and the mental, emotional. Mm-hmm. And so Chinese medicine, first and foremost, I think is a good method to look to as a model for how to integrate the healing of both the mental and the emotional, as well as the physical aspects. Mm-hmm. And then acupuncture specifically, because what we're doing is helping the body work as well as possible. Mm-hmm. What acupuncture does in the context of recovery is, I think, remove a number of obstacles that can really get in the way of getting better. Mm-hmm. So for instance, if digestion or eating is actually physically uncomfortable, mm-hmm. you have acid reflux or epigastric pain or constipation or diarrhea or any of those that get in the way, understandably, of normalizing your food intake, acupuncture can help mitigate a lot of that. Because again, we're regulating the major systems of the body, and that includes things like digestion, hormones, all of those things. So that's first, is that it can help just kind of move the physical healing process along and thereby further the process of recovery. And then the other aspect, and sometimes, and this goes back to our earlier conversation about acupuncture, where people are surprised that acupuncture is actually a very emotionally centering and relaxing experience, because recovery from an eating disorder is a difficult thing to do. And what acupuncture can add to that is helping ease kind of how you feel in your body emotionally. One of the very first things people often feel with acupuncture after their first experience is they feel calmer and more centered and more balanced. And certainly when you're in a better space, it's a lot easier to do the other work of recovery.
Right. Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. I sometimes have to do a meditation or a calming exercise with somebody, and just to kind of get them ready to do the talk therapy or EMDR that we're going to be doing. So if they had an acupuncture session before they came in, they'd be ready to go. Maybe a little sleepy, but
yeah. And that is one thing that I do like to say, is that I do think that acupuncture and being in a better space makes the other tools that, for instance, you and your other colleagues, it makes it more accessible, because you're not fighting through the anxiety and some of the emotional discomfort.
And I know you wrote a little bit also about how acupuncture can help when somebody's on medication for for their mood or anxiety. Can you talk about how those complement each other?
Sure. And this is one of the distinct advantages of acupuncture, I think, is that, again, we're not adding a foreign substance to the body that could interact with somebody's medication. What we're doing with acupuncture is just helping to ease any side effects, and it's very safe to use with pharmaceuticals. And so if it's creating a side effect, the medication regimen maybe is working for the symptom that you're taking for it, but it's also creating some side effects that make it less than ideal, then acupuncture can be added to the treatment plan to ease some of those side effects, whatever they may be.
Great. Yeah, I didn't realize that until I read your article, and I was like, oh, that is good to know that they can help each other.
And that's the part where it doesn't have to be all or nothing. I always say that acupuncture, you know, is no replacement for other types of therapy, but it can definitely be part of the plan to make it more complete and more comfortable.
Okay. So with eating disorders, we know that often there's negative body image and distorted body image. And it seems when going through acupuncture, you do have to allow, you know, your acupuncturist to have contact with your body and, you know, see your arms and legs potentially, depending on where the points are. And I could see that that might be really vulnerable or uncomfortable for someone in recovery. And also just laying there, you know, with their body out in a way, and just being kind of very conscious of their body in that moment. What do you find with the body image piece and acupuncture?
So I try to be very respectful about this, because the acupuncture experience, first of all, people are nervous about it in general, even if you don't have body image issues. And so you want to be very respectful that it's a new experience for them. And then in terms of the body image piece and how exposed you are, I feel very lucky to use a type of acupuncture, it's called the balance method, that allows you to do a lot with what are called distal points. And that just means that they're out further on the limbs, for instance, and that we aren't treating, like for instance, digestive issues. I don't necessarily have to put needles in your stomach or your abdomen. I can treat it with points, say on your wrist or your ankles. And so it allows me to kind of minimize the amount of exposure that people have to kind of be on the table, that we can treat a lot with relatively a little bit of exposed body. So I can do a lot just with your lower arm and your lower leg. And so I try to be respectful of that, just because that can be an obstacle. And there's no reason why it needs to be. It's perfectly effective to do it in a way that kind of minimizes the amount that people have to undress on the table, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's good to know.
And if people are uncomfortable about that and they're going to see an acupuncturist, it's definitely worth a conversation. You have every right to advocate for yourself in that, and it'll be a conversation with the acupuncturist who's trying to do the best job they can in terms of getting results for you. But that conversation, I really feel like, is part of the process. Mm-hmm. And advocating for your needs and having that be part of kind of the negotiation of how you're best served. Mm-hmm. I think that's a very legitimate concern, and hopefully people who are listening to this who are considering acupuncture and are maybe hesitant to try it because of that, mm-hmm. might consider that it's still okay to try acupuncture, and you do have a voice in how your treatment goes. Mm-hmm. And the acupuncturist will tell you if they can still, you know, be effective for you using different points. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But not to let that just be an absolute barrier to treatment. That it is a conversation that you should be able to have with your acupuncturist.
Yeah, I would imagine it also would help strengthen the relationship too, and working toward a trusting relationship.
Absolutely, and I think those conversations are therapeutic in and of themselves, mm-hmm. to be able to kind of advocate for yourself and explore what you're comfortable with.
Mm-hmm. Great, okay. So posture therapy also has to deal with the body. Can you explain what posture therapy is and what it's helping with?
Sure. So posture therapy, whenever I say posture, people tend to sit up straighter.
Oh, yeah. I just did. I was like, oh, I'm going to lean back and stretch.
But it's actually a little bit more than that. It's not just like sitting up straight. It has to do with the overall alignment of your body. And kind of the muscular habits that maintain that alignment. And so what posture therapy is doing, it involves an examination of your posture just to see what's out of alignment. Maybe one shoulder is higher than another, or one hip is forward, or one foot is tipped outward. And to take all those things into account and then create a kind of a menu or a series of therapeutic exercises to rebalance the muscles and thereby maintain better posture. And it is good for a lot of things. Usually it's most commonly used, at least in my office, in terms of people in acute pain, maybe back pain or neck pain or headaches, that if you can restore the body's proper alignment, it goes a long way towards relieving muscle tension, stopping wear and tear on joints. So that's usually the most common way. But I do think there is an emotional element to it as well, that you tend to feel better in the world when you are balanced and physically functional as possible, mm-hmm. right? That you operate without pain. You can sit up straight. You can turn your head fully to look out your rear mirror when you're driving, for instance, just basic functional things in the world. And we also know that, for instance, emotionally traumatic or upsetting experiences, that translates into kind of a different posture. Maybe you hunch forward, maybe it's kind of hunching into the fetal position, and all of those things can become habitual. And so if you can disrupt kind of the physical piece of it, I think sometimes it can also help the emotional piece.
Hmm. Wow. What about with trauma? Is posture therapy helpful if someone's in that fight or flight mode?
You know, I think that that's just a piece that comes along with the relationship between our emotions and our body. I don't think you can escape that. Mm-hmm. And so whenever you're putting the body back in balance, whether it's from acupuncture or exercises to relax certain habitually tense muscles, for instance, mm-hmm. that's also going to translate into becoming more balanced and releasing trauma from the body. Mm-hmm. It may not, replace the work that you do with a therapist around the trauma, mm-hmm. but it can definitely be a piece that kind of adds to the overall balance and therapeutic experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I would imagine that then with an eating disorder patient, that this also could be helpful because they're a lot of times ashamed of their body, which does change their posture and body language. And I know my clients will often curl up on a ball on my couch and I'm like, okay, let's ground and let's get the feet on the ground and open up a little, or they're kind of closed off. They're maybe trying to take up less space in some way.
Absolutely. And as you say, that does translate into certain postures in the world. The other piece of that that I think goes along with it is a lot of eating disorder clients are just completely cut off from their body. Mm-hmm. And so there's not even a lot of awareness of where mm-hmm. they are in space and how their body's functioning and what it feels like to be in a more balanced state. And so sometimes after people get done with their posture therapy and I take them through the exercises, mm-hmm. they're really surprised at how different it feels to be in their body.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah, it's very interesting. I didn't know about posture therapy till I was reading over your bio and saw that you were certified in it. So it's another great resource to be aware of.
Yeah. Good.
So I know acupuncture also goes hand in hand with herbal medicine. How would herbal therapy or herbal medicine work with someone who's recovering from an eating disorder?
So it really depends on the person's individual circumstance. Mm. Sometimes herbs aren't appropriate for certain patients. So for instance, if somebody's on several medications, I tend not to even go towards herbal medicine because we don't want to disrupt the regimen. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's not appropriate and acupuncture is definitely the way to go mm-hmm. All by itself. However, there are herbs that can be very helpful for a wide variety of things. Everything from digestive discomfort, low energy, immune problems. And so as we practice Chinese medicine here in the States, herbal medicine tends to be kind of an adjunct that we add to acupuncture. Sometimes people are just on herbs, but it can definitely be added to somebody's treatment plan to kind of fill in the space in between acupuncture appointments and keep the therapeutic momentum going. Mm-hmm. And there are certain things like strengthening the immune system if you tend to get sick quite frequently or those sorts of things where herbal medicine can be very valuable. And I should also mention that herbal medicine is its own very well-respected branch of Chinese medicine. And for instance, in China, there are some people that's all they do is herbal medicine. So I don't mean to in any way suggest that it's not as valuable as acupuncture. I just think with eating disorders, sometimes acupuncture has some distinct advantages.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good to know. Are there any nutritional pieces that come up with acupuncture? I kind of vaguely remember some of my clients at times being recommended some food changes and it being problematic since they do have an eating disorder and they can latch on to certain things if they hear like they shouldn't be having one food or more of something else. Have you come across that at all in your work?
Sure, absolutely. So Chinese medicine does have a nutritional therapy piece that has to do with the energetics of particular foods and eating certain foods or not to create balance in the body. I think, though, if you are in recovery from an eating disorder, that's really your nutritionist or your dietitian's job. So I tend not to kind of go there because that's not really my role. You already should have somebody in place helping you guide your way through that specifically with your particular food choices. So I think that's not a piece that I tend to use, and I quite consciously don't use it with my eating disorder folks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Because sometimes it's just complicated and it doesn't make anything easier. Mm-hmm. And so if patients ask me, well, what should I be eating? My answer is whatever your nutritionist and dietitian has told you.
Great.
And what you're working on. That's my answer.
Yes. Kelly will like that answer. Yeah. Are there any other holistic components to acupuncture that we haven't touched on yet?
Well, I do think there are some other tools in Chinese medicine that can be basically relevant for somebody recovering from an eating disorder. Mm-hmm. And some of those have to do with the meditative practices, what we call Qigong, which really just means energy work or energy practice. So like a meditation practice, it's something that you do on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And the advantage of that has to do with kind of cultivating a different relationship with your body through mental concentration. So it's very similar. Qigong is very similar, which might be a little bit more familiar to your listeners, which is Tai Chi, which is like slow movement that requires some concentration. So it's like moving meditation. Mm-hmm. The difference tends to be that Qigong is a little bit shorter than learning a full Tai Chi form, for instance. So there's a little bit less of a learning curve. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're just very basic movements coupled with the breath. Mm-hmm. And there tends to be kind of a common theme, regardless of which movement you're using. It has to do with posture, something that I think is relevant, mm-hmm. Your breath and concentration. Mm-hmm. And you bring all of those together with some simple physical movements. And it's actually a very nice meditation practice. And it also, depending on what movements you use or are prescribed by your acupuncturist, it can also have a very therapeutic benefit to help strengthen certain systems of the body that may need a little bit more attention. Mm-hmm.
Would you say yoga is similar?
I would say that it is similar, that there is some definite crossover in terms of benefits. Mm-hmm. And in fact, Qigong, part of the story or history of it, actually comes from the yoga tradition. It was then moved into China, which the practitioners then kind of went in their own separate direction, but they have similar roots.
Oh, okay.
It is the story that goes along with how Tai Chi and Qigong were introduced to China.
Interesting. Yeah. It seems like another great way to help people who with eating disorders be in their body in a safe way, and it not be about burning calories or about, you know, what they look like, and they can just kind of freely flow and notice how their body moves, how their breath moves in and out of their body. That's really great.
And I think it's kind of contrary to the common idea where to be valuable, exercise has to be more and it has to be hard work and you have to really exert a lot of effort, that there is value in physical movement that has to do with gentleness and relaxation, mm-hmm. and flow and just appropriate posture and breath, mm-hmm. that can actually go a long way towards restoring health. Mm-hmm. There is a different way to exercise, mm-hmm. with your body.
Yeah, great. Well, all this information has been really helpful, and I think our listeners are definitely going to get a lot out of it. And if they were thinking about acupuncture, I think they'd feel a lot more comfortable now.
I hope so. I really do think it's valuable for a lot of people.
Yeah. Are there any websites or other resources that you would recommend for people to check out if they want more information or if they want to find an acupuncturist?
Yeah, there are a couple. One is called acufinder.com. Mm-hmm. ACUfinder.com, and they have a lot of articles just for the average person. You don't have to know anything about acupuncture. The articles are on a wide variety of topics. And they also have kind of a database of practitioners where you can put in your zip code if you're looking for somebody, mm-hmm. and the information comes up and you can see if you think that practitioner is relevant for what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. There's also acupuncture.com, which is also designed for the average person. And so it also has a lot of information and articles on it. If you're just looking for, can acupuncture help this? Mm-hmm. What kind of information is out there? It has information that people will probably find useful.
And then that's the website that your one of your articles is on, right? Making Peace, Acupuncture,
yes.
and Eating Disorders?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, if anyone wants to read more about eating disorders and acupuncture, that's a good resource. And we will be putting the websites on the Saver website. So if people are driving right now and they can't write this down, it'll be on the website. And then, Nora, are you open to listeners emailing you if they have questions, if they want to connect with you through email?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. I'm always up to answer questions about Chinese medicine.
Great. So what email can they reach you at?
So it's N. McIntyre, LAC at yahoo.com.
Okay.
So, and my last name, LAC at yahoo.com.
Great. And we'll also put Nora's email and website actually on the Saver website when we upload this episode. So that's great. Well, again, this is very fascinating and I'm really glad we were able to do this today.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much. So as we wrap up, is there any suggestions to our listeners of something or some idea that they could savor?
Well, I really think that the hallmark of Chinese medicine is that there is a very close and intimate relationship between the mind and the emotions and the physical body. And in fact, the idea of the mind-body connection isn't necessarily something that we refer to so much in Chinese medicine, because we don't even recognize that there is a distinction or a separation between those two things, that we are both physical and emotional and you can't separate them at all. Mm-hmm. And so maybe you might want to just kind of pay attention to the relationship to your physical state and how it affects your emotions, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And that the good news is you can also intervene if you don't like how you're feeling. Mm-hmm. And you can do that with, for instance, breathing exercises, or just taking a quiet moment and concentrating on something perhaps that makes you grateful. Very simple, non-difficult things that you can do to actually make a huge shift in how your body's functioning in that moment.
Great. Great idea. Thank you so much. All right. Thanks.
Thank you.